who's the jerk?
Hello there, and welcome to the Gadget Grill here on this beautiful whatever it is. I'm the Professor Stumpy Steamboat Gaz.
I'm Alex Horosh.
I'm Jason Moore.
And we are here for another show. Guys, how have you been? Alex, what have you been doing? What have you been up to? Are you well, sir?
I am well. I've spent most of the week following the news out of Vegas for CES was on this week, which is the world's largest consumer electronics trade show. So
indeed.
We've got lots to talk about this week.
Okay.
Well, what I find the funniest thing about CES is that you get all of the news and all of the press releases and everything, and then all of the media leave, and then they're like, right, the show is open. The public can now walk in and see all of the stuff that's been reported on for the last few days.
The public can't walk in.
I was going to say, it's not open to the public. It's a trade show.
Yeah, after the media left, I thought it was open to the public then.
No, it's a trade show only. Trade only. So, really? Well, that's the first. Yeah. Okay, that's the first correction of Jason tonight. Let's see how many we can get. It is
plus one strike.
Yeah, strike one, Jace.
So it's open. It's open to the trade. At least.
Yes.
Yeah, because the media are the ones who... we're usually there amongst the media rather than the actual trade show participants.
We are indeed.
Also, all the trade show participants are there too.
Not all of them, though.
Yeah, as soon as day one opens...
But we're there before day one.
Yeah, we also get press day, where the companies actually hold their big press events.
You know what? I think it's high time we went back to CES.
Gadget Girl CES special.
Yeah.
Oh. I mean, this is kind of a Gadget Girl CES special. We're just doing it from
Australia. we should be doing it live from the show floor.
The show floor.
All those in favour? Aye.
Aye.
Those against? Motion carried.
All right. Good.
Let's start the music. Let's start the music with Booker T and the MGs and Green Onions.
Welcome back to the Gadget Grill, now that my microphone is on Radio 2RDJ 88.1 on the FM band, on the internet, at www.radio2rdj.com.
Welcome back in duty.
Now, we mentioned at the start of the show, it is CES week. So,
although I've got some non-CES news as well.
No, you don't.
It's
a lie.
I know.
Why did I let the team down?
No.
I'm not letting the team down.
Look, let's open with the non-CES news, and then we'll go headlong into CES news and see what happens.
Okay, the non-CES news. This relates to owners of the Ring security cameras by Amazon, where... people have been, what's the word I'm after here?
So I can tell you what's been happening.
Go ahead. I'm struggling to find exactly the right word. Eavesdropping isn't quite right.
It's not quite right, no. So Ring has been the subject of a bit of a whistleblower expose in the last couple of days, claiming that the company's Ukrainian-based development team had access to a copy of every video produced from every Ring camera ever in order to improve the product.
Oof.
Now, Ring has vehemently denied this and said that they only give the development team access to publicly shared videos from their neighbor function and to videos provided by customers who have expressly provided their consent for their videos to be shared. Now, there's a further part to this controversy, which is that that's the Ukrainian part of the story. In America, it's said that Ring's executives have had elevated access privileges to their customer service portal, which allows them to look up videos created by Ring's customer cameras by email address.
Oh, wonderful.
And saying that if you know the email address of a particular journalist, for example, you could look up their videos created by their cameras. Now, Ring stresses that nobody has access to a live feed from their cameras and that they enforce strict ethical standards and behaviour standards amongst their staff. And if anyone is found violating those standards, that they are
subject to... I'll get a promotion.
In all seriousness, they're subject to disciplinary action, possible termination and possible legal action. So... It's a bit of a he said, she said situation at the moment because the website that this was originally reported on, The Intercept, went into quite a lot of detail about the company culture, and Ring is basically saying that no, they don't agree with the story, but they didn't expressly deny some parts of it.
Of course not. Of course not. Okay, let's start off with young Alex here.
The more fun stories of the week are the CES stories.
Oh, obviously, yes, yes.
So one of the big things at CES each year is TVs, and funnily enough, they keep getting
bigger.
Keep getting bigger. Hisense showed a...
100-inch laser projector.
100-inch laser projector TV. Mm-hmm. That's big.
Yeah, so that's essentially a short for a projector where it comes with a screen and it comes with a little projector unit that you place, I think it's about 30 centimetres away from the screen, your screen panel.
The distance is small enough that it will fit on a standard entertainment unit.
It'll fit on the same stand
you'd
put a TV on anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty cool. I like short throw projectors. I reckon there's something there. Something there for the future. I wouldn't mind having one in my house.
I still prefer, because you're never going to get as black a backlight or
that's
as
true.
Black blacks.
As an OLED.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So one of the exciting things that happened with OLED this year is LG's rollable OLED. It's a 65-inch TV that retracts into its base when you're not using it, which is very sci-fi. It is,
although like you're going to lose some of your storage space under the TV in your TV cabinet because it takes up a big cabinet, but it's still, the video of it rising out of its base is quite mesmerizing.
It's majestic.
It is.
And
would be especially so if it was a 100-inch TV.
Yes, that would be almost a very like Space Odyssey monolith.
I think that's the music that should play automatically whenever the TV rises out of the panel anyway.
Obviously.
So it's a fairly large base because like you're not going to roll up the screen that tightly, but it's extremely impressive. This full TV panel appears from nowhere,
and it's super extra. Like it is mm-hmm. like let's not you know I mean I love it, but it's also kind of unnecessary. It's
yes,
I think from a technological innovation perspective, it's fascinating because. You know, if we've got rollable displays, what else can you do with them? And, you know, this year we're going to see a lot of foldable phones, and it's just now that
we're going to talk about the foldable phone, but...
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but it's just when you have this rollable display technology.
I knew this was going to happen.
Yeah, so it'll be fascinating to see where it goes, and I quite frankly am excited. This TV is going to probably quite pricey. It's going to be LG's new flagship. We're expecting five figures, so
it's a 65-inch model, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's not super enormous. It's a nice big TV, but it's not up in like the 80 and 90-inch size classes of
TV. But Samsung, excess. Sony, and LG all had TVs in that ballpark, 98 or so inch 8K displays.
Mm-hmm. And again, overkill.
Yeah, so there's no 8K content around right now. No movie studio or TV studio.
There's very little 4K content.
There's a lot more 4K content than there used to be.
Yes. But more than nothing is still not a whole lot.
Most of Netflix's
TV shows are probably mastered for 4K these days. Yeah. Like the quality ones. But yeah.
My question, though, is...
Don't know about Married at First
8K,
Sight.
8K, thank you. is 8K TV a solution looking for a problem?
I kind of think so. I think it's...
I'm not even sure it's a solution. It's just a technology looking for something to do.
Yeah. When you see an image on 4K TV... My God, it looks bloody beautiful.
Yeah, I feel like it's iteration for the sake of iteration.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, you know, it will make a difference on a 100-inch TV because a 4K image will be a bit more stretched out on a 100-inch TV.
But the quality inherent in 4K is going to be very comfortable on...
100 inches.
On a 100-inch TV.
Well, I'm sure it is, but it does feel like a necessary future-proofing, but... This is what the technology industry does.
Gold plating. Unnecessary.
Yeah. And there is a lot of talk about upscaling algorithms where these TVs will use AI to turn your 4K content into...
It's the same thing they've always used. It's an upscaling algorithm. They're just calling it AI this year.
Yeah, this is a good point.
Yeah.
When we talk about smart TVs, of course... There's a lot of technology involved in the so-called smart part of the TV.
I was going to say, you managed to get a smart out of Gary without a so-called in front of it.
Well, you know, we're getting there, Jason. We're getting there. Because apparently it is now cheaper to build a TV with all of this extra technology built in than it is to build one without that technology. If we didn't have that technology in there, then the TVs would cost more. And, of course, part of that is all of the tracking of users that they're doing, the reimbursement that various people get to do all this tracking of users to see what you're watching and where you're going and all that sort of stuff.
So I'm not sure just how true that actually is. I saw this story as well the other day, and... I do think there's perhaps a bit of a fallacy about it. Like, the first thing is that you could absolutely build a TV without smart internals in it. And the companies still do. And guess what? They're cheaper than the smart TVs.
But why are they cheaper? Is that, you know,
because they don't have the equipment inside them that you do in the smart TV.
Are we talking, when we say they don't have the equipment in them, are we talking about simply the smarts, or are we also talking about there are lesser quality LED screens?
I don't think that the whole user tracking stuff really is that lucrative for these companies.
Remember that we're about to start seeing TVs with Alexa and Google.
I just don't think it brings in that much money for them compared to the cost of a TV.
On the subject of smarts, one of the biggest stories at CES this year actually...
Everyone's getting smarter.
Yeah, smart TVs getting smarter. Mm. It was actually quite a surprising announcement. Sony, Samsung, and LG TVs will all, from 2019, will all have Apple AirPlay.
Yes.
I think that's a pretty damn good development for Apple.
Yeah, which means you'll be able to wirelessly beam content from your iPhone, from your iPad, or from your Mac direct to your TV.
Is this the same Samsung that was suing Apple a few years ago and the same Apple that was suing Samsung?
They've kissed and made up, and they've made up in an even bigger way, haven't
Indeed.
They?
Indeed. Yeah, and Samsung TVs will also come with iTunes preloaded. So you'll be able to rent or buy movies directly from the iTunes store.
That's a very good move Samsung from TV. Apple's point of view.
It's a fantastic move from iTunes' point of view.
I'm not the greatest fan of iTunes.
No, but it's got a great movie library, and it also it has a four. It's the only place where you can buy a 4K movie in Australia digitally, or one of the only.
Right.
So there's a couple of things about this that I'm quite interested in. Right. So. Apple's going to start to produce their own content for their own video services. And so if you're going to do that, you actually want to be able to broaden out the audience for that content as much as possible. And so I think putting the iTunes... And it's not full iTunes, it's only iTunes movies and TV. And putting that onto another platform, I think, is kind of a bit of a test run for taking that service a little bit wider still. And I think somewhere deep down in the bowels of an Apple building in Cupertino, I reckon they've got iTunes Android app. No, they've got several buildings. I reckon there's an iTunes Android app that's going to make itself known at some point this year.
I would not be at all surprised.
But it really does point to Apple becoming a services company. Because, you know, when you sell someone an Apple TV, that's...
Well,
not everyone's going to buy an Apple TV, as in like
well,
a little set-top box under TV.
Bearing in mind their prediction for their hardware sales, with the reduced prediction.
Oh, that's the iPhones, but yeah.
Well, the iPhones have been their biggest money spinner, and if they're going to be selling less of those, they've got to become a services company. That's where they've got to make their money now.
Let's talk about the AirPlay play
for
a minute as well, right? Because for the last few years, we've been seeing Chromecasts fly off store shelves, and the cheapest way to get an AirPlay device onto, or like AirPlay output onto your TV screen, has been to purchase an Apple TV. Now, how much is an Apple TV?
They started about $200.
$200, right? And so you could go out and buy a $50. There's a couple of things there. You can go out and buy a $50 Chromecast, and you could use that to cast your device or cast videos onto your television.
Yes.
But, you could also go on and buy the older generation of Apple TV as well, I think, which is much, much cheaper. But also, that's not in production anymore. It's not that easy to get. And so, there's been a real barrier to AirPlay adoption on the TV front. So, this is a really good move from Apple to say, hey, look, let's broaden out the AirPlay protocol and market. So, anyone with an iPhone, it's actually easier to get the stuff from their display onto all of these TVs now than it is to get it from your Android phone. Because not all of those devices can be cast to or anything like that.
Well, what's really interesting is Sony's Android TVs have native Chromecast and native AirPlay. So
that's going to be pretty cool. So I think what that says is that, we know AirPlay is a software protocol, right? You can implement an app that supports it. And so that's clearly what's going to end up happening on Sony's Android TV device. Either Apple's given them the protocol spec for it, or they've actually given them an Android app that functions as an AirPlay receiver. I would be interested to see if it rolls out to other Android TV devices as well, or even if it just becomes an app that's available in the Play Store.
Indeed.
That could be legitimately amazing.
So on the subject of Google, actually.
Okay.
Google had some pretty big news from CES as well.
They did.
So Google Home's going to get a whole lot smarter with an interpreter function.
Yeah, this looks really good, doesn't it?
Yeah, so it's almost real-time translation. So it's going to work best with Home Hub because it has a screen. And so you'll say, like, hey, Google, help me speak French, which will fire up
all of my devices, the interpreter. Just going off, thank you.
So if you use... so then you'll...
Seriously, my phone just blinked.
Okay, Google, shut up.
And it did it again.
After you fire up a command, you can then just speak naturally and have your conversation. So I might say, I'd like to order a red wine, and then it will translate that in real time on the screen as I'm speaking, and then when it's detected a pause, it will read it out in French for whoever I'm speaking with. And then that person can speak in French to me, and it will have the text on the screen, and then read out the English version.
I think it's pretty amazing. Google's done a few things like this in the translation realm. They did the real-time translation on the Pixel 2 last year, the year before last, with the Pixel Buds. And now this as well. Like, are there any other tech companies that actually, you know, throw out this much stuff for translation on a regular basis? It's pretty amazing.
And so, of course, I mean, this is limited to your Google, will be limited to Google Home. It's really meant for, like, hotels or restaurants where...
It will, in fact, be trialed at a casino in Vegas, I believe.
Yes, Caesar's Palace.
Oh, wonderful. I'm going to play some music, guys.
Sure. Okay.
This is The Atlantics and Bombora. Thank you.
listening to The Gadget Grill on Radio 2 RDJ 88.1 on the FM band and radio2rdj.com on the web.
Indeed you are.
And we're going to keep talking about Google Assistant.
Google Assistant and a bit of other news from CES, shall we?
Yeah, there's so much.
There is so much. I think the other interesting thing with Google Assistant and CES was the launch of a new thing called Google Assistant Connect. And this sort of takes the form of a chip that device manufacturers can integrate into their devices and allow their device to query a Google Home device on the same network as them to get information. So if you wanted to display something that displays the weather, you could either integrate all of the smarts and everything to do Google Home and Google Assistant stuff yourself, or you could put the Google Assistant Connect chip in your device and get the weather from a nearby Google Home and display it the way you want to. So it should allow device manufacturers to get Google Assistant on the cheap, but it does rely on you already having a Google Home in your house.
Oh, that's really cool.
There's still a lot. There's a large number of places with Google Home in their house already.
Mm. So, of course, CES, like, you know, there's a conventional technology at CES, and then there's the weird as hell tech. And
This is one of the fun things about walking around the halls. Is like, wow, you came up with that. Okay.
Yeah. It's like, oh, wait, you made a GoPro for babies.
Yeah.
Why did you make a GoPro for babies? What were you thinking?
Oh, yes. I've got that one listed here as well.
Some of the wild tech is, you can only really explain it as like, someone funded this and didn't ask any questions.
Yeah. So one of the more practical ones is LG's getting into homebrew. So they've made a Nespresso-style machine where you put in capsules to brew beer.
For beer? Really?
Yes. And so obviously, it's not instant like Nespresso.
Yeah.
But you use the pods to kind of design your beer. And then a few weeks later, you'll have a 5-litre keg of beer.
This sounds exactly like what happens when technology companies get into brewing.
Yeah.
It's like they want. I mean, yeah, we were saying earlier over dinner when we were talking about wine and wanting to be consistent with your output. Like, you want to create a homebrew system that allows you to put a consistent input in and get a consistent output out.
Yeah, it's very cool, and it's we don't have any pricing or availability information yet, but it's just a really interesting piece of tech that could be an approachable way to.
Does it carry LG's AI ThinQ branding?
Oh, I hope not.
ThinQ Homebrew. There we go.
Oh, dear. Another beer-related one is Fresh Jeffrey, the French butler, which I guess you'd kind of describe this as a party Roomba.
Yeah, party Roomba. It'll follow you around. It's got
a beer keg.
Yeah, it's got a beer keg inside it. It's got spaces to hold glasses for wine and other beverages. And it's also got holders for all your snacks.
Yeah, so it's essentially a butler on wheels that works just like a Roomba. It maps at your house. You can call it over to you to refill your beer from the inbuilt keg. You can put your wine down when you're getting snacks.
Does it have Google Assistant and HomeKit integration?
Oh, I'm not sure. It's coming to Kickstarter soon, and it just seems like a wild time. And I mean, as you'd expect from a robot called Fresh Jeffrey, the French butler.
Yes. Look, do you want to keep going with some wine?
Sorry, Fresh Jeffrey of France, party butler droid.
3,000.
Yes, I saw this. Another solution looking for a problem.
Oh, I think this problem is fairly well defined. Its problem is when you need to get the party started, and all you have is a Roomba.
Yes.
Look, you basically, the problem with this is that, well, the problem with the, you know, using your Roomba to make drinks at the party is that you would need to actually get your cat off the Roomba. This specifically, it will not take your cat.
Maybe this is a device that they need on Whose Line Is It Anyway when they do their party game, you know, sort of the different people at the party. Maybe that's what they need.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So there was also a clothes folding machine.
Yes, I saw this. Our former colleague Jeff Quattromani had a lovely video demonstrating this. It was fantastic. I really enjoy it.
You throw your clothes in and they come out folded. And
I mean, look, you can't throw your clothes in. You just don't have to place them in a predefined pattern.
Yes.
Yeah. But the folding job it does is excellent.
It appeared to be very good, but...
It's very large.
This is a very... it looks larger than my bloody car.
My question is, so how long do you think you spend folding a day? Like 5 minutes?
A week.
Yeah, 5 minutes a week?
It'd be a half hour a week.
Yeah, so what's half hour now worth to you in terms of financial value?
Well, if you're sitting down watching TV and folding at the same time, you know, I can multitask.
Yeah, so, and I think that's a thing.
I think I see where Alex is going with this.
Yeah, so how... The question is, like, how much folding do you have to do for this to actually... come out as a good purchase from an economic perspective? Like, it's a really cool idea, but yes. It does feel like one of those times where Silicon Valley is just trying to replace its mum with technology. It's like, oh wait, mum and dad won't drop me.
Where are you going to put it? It's enormous.
Yeah, but it's just like so many like Silicon Valley bits of tech just do seem to be things that your parents used to do for you. Yeah. It's like, oh, mum and dad won't drop me off places anymore. Guess I'll make an app for that.
And thus Uber was born.
Yes.
Yes. Now that you do make an excellent point, but I still kind of want a machine to do folding of clothes for me, but I think I might wait for the second generation.
Can we get one that doesn't just fold clothes but also counts money?
We could get a machine that counts money and a machine that folds clothes.
No. I want to have one that does both.
Why?
And also makes pasta. How about that?
At the same time?
All at the same time, yeah.
What if you end up getting pasta that's made from your old T-shirt?
I think I'll pass on that. What's next? Alex, Jason?
So Sony had its own party speaker. Yeah, it was.
Sony's been doing a few of these party speakers for a while, haven't they?
Yeah, but this one also has 4 cup holders for your beers.
I didn't see this one.
Excuse me?
Yeah, like, have a look. It's got cup holders. This speaker has cup holders.
Fair enough, too. Just hold it up to the microphone.
I can see that. That looks worse than the bloody boombox.
Doof-doof boombox in the park on Saturday, and yes. It disturbed his calm.
It disturbed my calm. I'm sitting there quietly. We've had a nice evening, early-ish dinner. We're sitting down there having a...
I still maintain that you should have taken over their Bluetooth.
I don't know that they had Bluetooth.
I bet all those things have Bluetooth. Mm. Anyway, since we are talking about some boomboxes, Sennheiser showed off its U-Bute new soundbar at CES as well. Very, very...
Very fancy.
Very fancy, very premium. I believe the Sennheiser Sydney store has actually had it in the store for a while.
They had a couple of nice soundbars when I went there for the official launch of that store.
Yes, yeah, so I saw it in there as well, and... The store manager said to me that, they've said that they were going to launch the soundbar at CES, and I said, yeah, the soundbar is here, and we're not really making a big deal of it. So people could have actually seen the soundbar before launch.
Oh, no, it was announced at last year.
It was announced last year, but not actually demoed.
Ah.
Yeah.
And in news a little bit closer to home from CES, Telstra went all the way to Las Vegas to tell a bunch of Australian journos that... it will be launching its first 5G phones in the first half of this year. It hasn't said who it's partnered with, but it says these will be exclusive launches, which is possibly just due to the fact that Telstra is the only one who's actually going to have...
A 5G network.
Yeah, up and running in the sense that it can actually support phones.
We have heard from a number of manufacturers that they're planning to release 5G phones this year, so it could be any of them.
Yeah, Samsung has said a first half of 2019 for a 5G phone. LG has said the same. So those could be likely candidates. HTC?
I was going to say HTC. HTC is my dark horse choice, mm-hmm. based on the fact that we've seen a HTC mobile broadband spot that is apparently connected to a Telstra network. So mm-hmm. I reckon they could be partnering with Telstra on a phone as well. Let's face it, someone's got to partner with HTC for a phone at some point, right?
But you know, I think some of them will be brand name devices, like, you know, the LG G8 and the Galaxy S10.
But they won't be exclusive.
They'll be
so they could be exclusive. They could just be exclusive SKUs, right?
No, yeah. I think so. Yeah, the 5G SKU could very well be exclusive to Telstra because no one else will be selling 5G phones in the first half of 2019.
The Telstra 5G version of the phone will be exclusive to Telstra.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Going to play some more music now.
Cool, cool.
This is, again, from the 60s. This is The Safaris and Wipeout.
Wipeout!
Welcome back to the Gadget Grill here on 2RDJ FM 88.1 on the FM band, on the internet at radio2rdj.com. Now, Jason, you've been playing, you've been, your image has not been tarnished by what you're about to talk us about.
No, my image is tarnished by plenty of other things.
Yeah, I know, I know.
So I had a bit of a holiday project that I wanted to talk about. I've been reviewing a product from Epson called the Fast Photo Scanner. Now, it's a scanner that's designed to help you archive some of your photos in a quick way. It can feed a bunch of photographs into it and scan them at the rate of about one photo every 3 to 4 seconds.
That's pretty fast for a scanner.
That is pretty damn fast. Let's talk about the process of scanning photos. Let's
talk about what I used it for.
Well, first of all, the process of scanning...
Let's let Jason tell the story, Gary.
No, well, the process of scanning can be quite intensive because you've got to identify the photo and the image with it. That does present a problem when you've got a lot of photos to scan.
It does.
Carry on, sir. Jason.
So normally, if you were to scan, so my parents have a scanner, and I won't use it to do what I've been trying to do. Now, my holiday project was that I wanted to get all of my parents' photographs scanned and
both
online.
Of them?
All of my parents' photographs, yes, and they are listening too, so they're going to send you a nasty text in a minute into Google Photos while I was on holidays visiting them in Melbourne for a couple of weeks over Christmas. Epson was kind enough to send me the scanner for review just in time for my arrival into Melbourne, and I did get my parents to prepare ahead of time to dig out a bunch of old photographs, or dig out photographs, which we had a lot of photos stored in tubs, and of course we had a lot of photo albums with photos in it as well. So we had to go through and remove photographs from albums. There were a couple of albums that I was not game enough to try, because when I removed photos from them, it felt like I was tearing them out of a page. So we'll have to deal with those ones separately. But what I ended up doing, you can set the Fast Photo Scanner to scan at 300 DPI. It will do one photo a second. But I was happy given that the alternative is a flatbed scanner and scanning each photo individually. I was happy to give the scanner 3 seconds a photo to scan them at 600 DPI. Now, once it scans the photos, it puts them into an output directory, and it will automatically enhance them, do some color correction, exposure correction.
Remove red eye.
Oh, yes,
that's really cool.
It's a really, really good feature of it.
Can you disable that if you're a bit of a purist?
So when it scans the photo, it will leave the original file on disk, and it will leave the enhanced file on disk as well. So you can turn the enhancements off and just use the original.
Can you customize the enhancements? Can you pick which enhancements you want, or does it just do a generic bash enhance?
So if you don't like the automatic one, you could go back to the original and apply the enhancements that you like.
Okay, cool.
I would say that... So in general, I've tended to go for the enhanced ones because some of the photographs, when they've printed, the print has deteriorated over time. And in general, the automated enhancements have greatly improved the quality of the photos that they scan.
That's what you want to hear.
So, yeah, you do. Really clever feature of it as well is that you might find over the years your family has gone through and written on the back of their photos the subjects of the photos, and you don't lose that with the fast photo scanner either. It actually takes a photograph of the back of the photo as it scans it and stores it along with the original files. So as long as you've got a way of going through and drawing the captions out of it, you can store those captions quite happily in your service of choice. So once I did this, I made the decision to use the enhanced versions of the photos. Over the course of about a week and a half, I scanned nearly 5,000 photos.
Whoa!
Now, you can't actually... You could not possibly say that with a flap-head scanner. You could not have done that and moved it through. So we have literally found every photograph in the house.
1.25 hours of scanning.
Yeah. That's also not taking into account the fact that we needed to find them, straighten them, remove them from albums, put them back in. So,
but in terms of pure scan time, that's
yes,
that's pretty impressive.
It totaled about 76 gigabytes of data on disk.
You should have gone with 300 DPI.
No, it was fine. It was fine. I did have a few issues, so like. I ran out of disk space at one point, and the software didn't notice.
I wonder why.
Yeah. But the scanning software didn't notice that I'd run out of disk space, and it just kept merrily scanning without saving files.
That's problematic.
That's a bit of a problem. I'm hoping that they'll fix that. And the other thing that I thought was a bit weird is that... so the software, when you scan it... So when you initiate a scan batch, it asks you for a year, a month... and a subject, and you can fill in any combination of those that you like, but it doesn't let you choose a day. So if you know that you're scanning an album of photos that you took on Christmas Day, the best that you can do is you can put them in December of that year, and then you'll have to edit them in something else and move them all onto the correct day. So I feel like the Fast Photo software is designed to get the scanning done as fast as possible, and then you'll move those files into something else, but it will set EXIF data the EXIF data for the dates on your images. So the end result is that my parents now have all of their photographs in Google Photos.
And they're somewhat categorized.
And yeah, they're generally chronologically categorized, chronologically ordered. And we can now scroll back to 1957 in Google Photos on my parents' Google account. And so there's a photograph of my dad.
But I was born in 1952.
That's good. That can be on your Google account.
Oh, right.
So there's a photograph of my dad asleep by a river in Mildura in 1957. I think
as was the fashion at the time.
Yeah, definitely.
Still
yeah.
is actually down in Mildura.
Look, he looks very peaceful.
Is he wearing shorts? Is he wearing stubbies and thongs?
No.
Oh, good.
Scott Morrison would be approve. So the one caveat about it is that it's quite expensive. It's $600+. I think it's somewhere between $600 and $700, depending on where you buy it. And for something that you will put to work scanning all of your photos and then sort of be done with it, I feel like Epson would be better off offering this as a rental service.
Yeah.
So you can pay your deposit, get it sent to you for a month, do your scanning, and then send it back to them. And so. That's going to be my recommendation for them. But you might also find that there might be other places around town that might buy the scanner and lease it to you for a few weeks.
Or do the scanning for you.
Yes, do the scanning for you.
Scanning as a service.
If the scanning is going to come up at less than the price of the Fast Photo scanner, then you might want to do that, but I suspect it might not.
Right.
Like, if I was going to scan 5,000 photographs, I doubt it would be cheaper than that.
If you buy it, then you can just loan that to your friends.
Yeah, so that's the thing, right? You could totally do this and sort of create a bit of a scanning ring with your friends. Right?
Yep. Okay. Excellent. How many snags would you give this?
Look, I would give it 4 snags for features and maybe 3 for the price.
Right. Okay. This is Bernard Bolan, and appropriately today, Australia Square.
Every day I wend my way to the middle of Sydney town, to earn my screw and do my due for a company of renown. I do my chore on the 40th floor of a building round and tall, up in the sky where the rents are high and we all do sweet damn all. When flash goes the light and ring goes the bell and up in the air we go, sailing in the sun. from it lift to the land of ice and snow. Up past the names that we've never heard of the people we don't know. I earn me bread with Sydney spread 600 feet below.
You're back listening to The Gadget Grill on Radio 2 RDJ, 88.1 on the FM band and radio2rdj.com on the web. And we're almost out of time for this week's episode, but we're not going to leave you without a useless gadget. And
CES, this, how could we do this?
There's so many
CES
pieces of tech that came out from this week.
CES had a plethora of them.
But
there's got to be one that sits atop the pile, like it's on a throne of some kind.
A smartphone, even.
Oh. Okay, this is not going to be a bummer of a device, is it?
It might be. So,
are we going to be flushed with success by the end of this story?
Yes. So, Kohler this week announced the Noumi 2.0.
2.0, there was a first one of these.
We should tell people what it actually is.
The Noumi 2.0 intelligent toilet. It has a heated seat, built-in speakers, personalized cleansing and dryer functions, and interactive multicolored ambient lighting.
I understand how this has made it into useless gadget and not into the news segment. I mean, this sounds amazing.
Well, I'm curious. It's got speakers in. Does it also have a microphone?
It does, because it has Alexa built in.
Oh god.
It's got
so
Alexa.
So I'm not sure, like, if you're like okay Alexa, flush for toilet.
But what I'm more interested in is how it personalizes it for you. Does it do voice recognition? And can it tell when you're having trouble? I can hear Gary speaking in the background of us.
No, I pressed the wrong thing.
Okay. So the smart toilet is a thing that exists.
The first edition costs $7,000 and...
Oh, that's kind of the money flushed down the toilet.
$7,000.
Yeah, that was
you can buy a whole bloody house for that.
No, you can't.
It depends on where you are. This is in America, and in America, you bloody well could. Not a very good one.
Are they ever? Anyway, so the smart toilet.
Coming to a bathroom near you.
I can see an exclusive nightclub installing this and it being like an attraction. Like a feature, like, you know, come along. You know, what's it called? Noumi.
Noumi.
They'll have a Noumi night. Noumi night.
Now, you said it's got Alexa built in, did you?
Yes.
So you could get Alexa to talk to your light panels.
Mm-hmm.
And, what were the light panels that we have?
I've got some Nanoleaf.
The Nanoleaf. So you could illuminate your bathroom with Nanoleaf.
Oh, but you don't need to. This toilet has multicolored.
This is exactly where I'm going to. So you could have music playing, which it can do.
It's already got its own lights built in.
You
don't need a Nanoleaf.
Does it have a disco ball?
Probably.
That
everything but the kitchen sink.
Well,
why doesn't it have a kitchen sink?
Hang on. Well, it's got a bathroom sink. But the disco ball. I think we better finish off the show, Alex.
So this has been The Gadget Grill. I'm Alex Harosh.
I'm Jason Murray, and this segment has gone down the toilet.
It has indeed. Oh, dear. I'm the Professor Stumpy Steamboat. Gaz, we'll be back next week if we're still on the air. We say that just about every week, don't we?
Look, we've had more poo talk this week than usual, so I know it's kind of... It's kind of up in the air.
So I love it when you talk dirty, Jason.
Yeah.
Toilet humor.
This is Milt Jackson and John Coltrane and Bebop. Take care, Australia.
Bye.